go.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the February 2025 meeting of the State Coastal Conservancy. My name is Doug Bosco, and I'm chair of the board. And, of course, I welcome everyone to be here on this rainy, miserable day. And for all of you who are here, we appreciate the extra effort that you've made to do that. I'm going to introduce our people today. We have a spate of illnesses and difficulties in getting here, so not everyone is here, but we have a quorum, of course, on Zoom. First of all, to my left is Michelle Perrault from the Department of Finance, and Michelle is here along with me, and we're the only two people sitting here. Then I'd like to introduce Mars Gutierrez-Graudins, who is our vice chair, and Mars is on Zoom and expecting to get put on jury duty, I think. Brian Cash is here, is on Zoom, representing the Natural Resources Agency. Brian's one of our long-standing members, and Brian, thank you for joining us. Justin Cummings is the new chair of the California Coastal Commission. Justin, we're very happy to have you with us. We've heard nothing but good things. Justin is, I believe, chair of the Santa Cruz, or the Board of Supervisors, is that correct?
It was last year.
Okay, good. Joy Sterling is on Zoom. Joy, welcome. Joy, unfortunately, in her home experienced severe flooding last night and this morning, and therefore is going to join us on Zoom. Jerry Hallisey is not here yet, but we're expecting him either in person or on Zoom. And Assembly Member Greg Hart is here on Zoom, I believe. And if so, welcome, Assemblyman Hart. And Kara Woodruff from Senator Laird's office is here on Zoom. Kara joins us frequently, and welcome, Kara. All right, then we have our staff. Amy Hutzel, our executive officer, is here, of course. Ryan Berghoff, our senior staff counsel. And Paul Johnson, our board clerk. Amy Roach, I think I saw Amy, is here, our counsel. Oh, okay. Then, let's see. Amy, do you want to go through the routine you have to go through?
Yes, I will go through the routine. So we're meeting today at the State Building in Oakland. We've planned for a hybrid meeting today so that members of the public are able to watch and participate remotely. If you're attending in person and you want to speak on any item on the agenda, fill out a speaker card. They're right outside the door. And pass it along to Paul Johnson, the board clerk, who will pass it on to Chairman Bosco. This includes any grantees and partners who want to speak on an item. Be sure to indicate which item you want to speak on the form. I'll keep going through this, and then the chair can introduce our arriving board member. You have two options for watching the meeting remotely, the webcast and Zoom. If you want to speak on the item, on an item, you have to join the meeting on Zoom. If you don't plan to speak on any item, you can watch the meeting on the webcast. If you're currently watching the meeting on the webcast and you plan to speak on an item, go to the Conservancy website at scc.ca.gov, click on Meetings and Notices, and register to speak if you have not done so already. You will be emailed a Zoom link. Once you're on Zoom, please use the raised hand button or press star 9 on your phone to speak at the appropriate time on the agenda, and we will call on people and move them over to the panelist screen to make comments. It does take a few seconds to move you over to the panelist screen, and it might look like you're being cut off, but you'll get moved. And then you have to unmute yourself to speak. We cannot unmute people on Zoom. Spanish translation is available for the meeting if you join by Zoom. There's a globe icon at the bottom of the Zoom screen. So with that, I'll turn it back to Chair Bosco.
Okay, and in Jeremiah Hallisey has just arrived and is joining us in person.
It was a little heavy today for me.
Thank you for being here, Jerry. I know it's a tough ride to come over. All right, Paul, would you please call the roll?
Before calling the roll, if Brian Cash and Justin Cummings, if you have a temporary disability, if you could explain it so that we could, the board could vote and count you towards the quorum. Brian.
Yes, I came down with the flu and went to the doctor, and he suggested it would probably not be a good thing if I spread it around. So I am at home today.
Sounds like a good doctor.
This is Justin Cummings. I came down with a cold 2 days ago, so I'm attending this meeting remotely due to a temporary disability under 1A of Government Code 11123.2, subdivision J1.
Okay, by the way, I forgot to mention something very important, and that is that Justin is the new chair of the State Coastal Commission, and in that capacity, he sits on our board. All right, then we're supposed to vote on these people's illnesses. All right. Do we need a motion?
So moved.
All right. Been moved, and Mr. Hallisey second that we accept the doctor's orders here. Paul, will you please call the roll?
Yes. Mr. Cummings?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groutage? Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Here.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
All right. Quorum is present.
Now, do we need a quorum call as well? Well, it couldn't hurt. Paul, will you just call the roll, please?
All right, Mr. Cummings?
Here.
Mr. Cash?
Here.
Ms. Gutierrez-Groutage? Ms. Perrault?
Here.
Mr. Hallisey?
Here.
Ms. Sterling?
Here.
Chair Bosco?
Here.
All right, we have a quorum again.
Okay, thank you. Next, we'll go on to approval of the minutes of our November 21st, 2024 meeting. Are there any additions, corrections, or changes in the minutes? If not, Ms. Perrault, will you move that we...
So moved.
And Mr. Hallisey seconds that we approve the minutes. Please call the roll, Paul.
Mr. Cummings?
Abstain.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
All right, the motion, the minutes are approved.
Thank you. Next, we'll go on to item three, the consent items. These are matters that appropriate $500,000 or less, or continuations of previously approved projects. Are there any public comments on the consent calendar?
We have no public comment.
Okay, are there any board members' comments? All right, if not, Paul, will you call the roll on the consent? Oh.
I'll move the item.
Oh, okay. All right, Ms. Perrault moves. Mr. Hallisey seconds that we approve the consent calendar. Paul, will you please call the roll?
Mr. Cummings?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
All right, the consent items are approved.
All right, next we'll go on to the executive officer's report, and Amy Hutzel will present that.
Great. Thank you, Chair Bosco and members of the board. We have a number of reports, starting with the progress on our strategic plan. We're at the end of the second of 5 years, and Evan Sloan, the deputy EO, will give that report first.
Good morning, Chair Bosco. I don't have a presentation. Good morning, Chair Bosco and members of the Conservancy Board. I'm Evan Borgnes Sloan, and I will be presenting on the second year of our progress on implementing the Conservancy's 2023 to 2027 strategic plan. Mary Small previously presented year one progress on the strategic plan in April of last year. So again, this is the second progress report on implementing the strategic plan, covering activities from January 2023 through January 2025, approximately 40% of the way through the five-year strategic plan timeframe. The Conservancy has been able to make significant advances on our strategic plan goals and objectives, largely because of the governor and legislature appropriating substantial resources to the Conservancy programs, primarily to fund nature-based climate adaptation. There are four goals in the strategic plan with measurable objectives under each goal. The fifth goal is qualitative and focuses on our organizational objectives. Our first goal is to prioritize equity. There are four objectives under this goal, and the Conservancy has made significant progress on each of them. The strategic plan targets spending 40% of the agency's funding to benefit systemically excluded communities and California Native American tribes. We have exceeded this goal with two-thirds, approximately 66%, of the Conservancy's funding supporting projects that benefit systemically excluded communities to date. Similarly, we have exceeded our goal target of 60% or 60 projects with meaningful community engagement, nearly doubling our progress from the last year's report. In terms of our work with California Native American tribes, since 2023, the Conservancy has funded 20 projects in collaboration with Native American tribes. This includes funding of $2.5 million to the Mendocino Land Trust to acquire the 157-acre Bell Point Coastal Blufftop property for a land return to the tribally chartered nonprofit organization Kai Poma for tribal ownership and management. Our second goal is enjoy the coast. This includes objectives related to the public access improvements and explore the coast overnight, and coastal stories programs that support coastal experiences to foster joy and belonging for people and communities who face challenges accessing the coast. The strategic plan has 14 objectives under this goal, and we have exceeded targets in six of those objectives and are making good progress on the others. Since 2023, 33 Explore the Coast projects were awarded grants. Staff estimates that these 33 projects will engage over 14,200 people. Of these people, project partners estimate that the program will serve over 11,600 low-income Californians, 12,300 people of color, 2,000 youth who are experiencing homelessness or in foster care, approximately 2,450 people for whom English is not their first language, and at least 4,000 people with physical, cognitive, and/or emotional disabilities. These grants allowed systemically excluded communities to feel the joy and healing powers of the coast without fear of financial cost, physical barriers, or feelings of not belonging. We are far exceeding targets on recreational facilities planned and built. For example, the Conservancy awarded $3 million to the East Bay Regional Park District to construct an additional 8 acres of parkland amenities at the tide day use area of the Martin Luther King Jr. shoreline in the city of Oakland. The new park's infrastructure was designed to be sea level rise resilient and includes natural play structures, an outdoor classroom, a new parking lot, a boat storage area, drinking fountains, a new restroom, and approximately 1,000 planted trees and shrubs. We are making slower progress on three of our objectives related to Explore the Coast Overnight. However, we are working with state parks and the Coastal Commission to advance additional projects in the coming years and are confident we will be able to achieve the targets. The Strategic Plan report contains a link to a recently completed five-year project update report for the ETC overnight program, and I recommend everyone checking that out. Our third goal is to protect and restore the coast with seven specific objectives. We have already far exceeded our five-year objective for acres of lands conserved, with over 72,000 acres conserved of our 50,000-acre target. For acres of habitat restored and enhanced, we have made major progress with a 40% increase compared to 2023. For example, the Conservancy awarded $30 million to the Southwest Wetlands Interpretive Association to implement the Tijuana River Estuary Tidal Restoration Project, consisting of restoring 85 acres of wetlands and associated habitats and enhancing public access at the Tijuana River Estuary in San Diego County. Our fourth goal is climate ready. Between July 2022 and February 2025, including projects that are being considered today, the Conservancy Board will have authorized more than $530 million of general fund and greenhouse gas reduction funds for coastal protection and sea level rise adaptation projects. We have made significant progress on our climate ready objectives, with four of the seven objectives already exceeding targets. For example, in Marin County, the Conservancy awarded $1.4 million to the town of Tiburon to implement a nature-based sea level rise adaptation strategy of restoring estuarine beach habitat that will buffer waves and storm energy and protect the adjacent community. For wildfire resilience projects implemented, we have more than doubled our target with over 11,000 acres of improved forest health and reduction in the risk of catastrophic fire. The Wildfire Resilience Program has built organizational capacity and workforce development at the local and regional level to implement forest health and fire risk reduction projects that include activities such as prescribed burns, fuel breaks, and cleared ladder fuels. In light of the devastating wildfires in Los Angeles County this winter, we look forward to expanding this work and aiding in the recovery with the 2024 Climate Bond funding. Our fifth and final goal is focused on internal organizational objectives. We continue to make good progress on our six organizational objectives, including providing staff training to expand skills and knowledge related to equity, tribal engagement, and access for people with disabilities. Additionally, with our extensive changes to the Conservancy's recruitment and hiring practices to increase the diversity of our candidate pools, we have increased the diversity of project managers, positions that were historically majority white. Finally, we continue to review and continue to improve our hiring practices, and I look forward to report on more progress on this and all of our goals next year. Thank you. Any questions?
Wanted to say thank you. First of all, I appreciate the clear updates and the progress reports. It's nice to be able to see the incremental movement between all of the goals. And so I greatly appreciate, again, just the way the staff has taken the time to lay out the report and make it very clear on where all these investments are going and the progress they're making. I did have one quick question on the Tijuana River Estuary that project specifically. Obviously it's a large amount of money. I know there's a lot of elements happening down there and a lot of partnerships that are having to be sort of pulled together to move. Is there any concern on that project that there'll be delays, or are you feeling specifically because we know there's a lot of work that has to happen, particularly with all of the runoff coming across the border before maybe some of this. Can you just talk a little bit about that impact, or if we have any concerns around that piece? And you're the wrong person.
I'm not the right person to answer that. Megan Cooper, the regional manager of the South Coast, is here and can back me up, and maybe Amy knows. But to my knowledge, those impacts are not impacting the restoration project timeline, but they are still fundraising for the project. So that $30 million is a part of the overall budget, but is not the full budget.
Okay, that's great to hear.
Yeah.
I know there's that community is in dire need of having
yeah.
many elements take place to let them access, not just the river, but the oceans and the beaches right there. So I appreciate the update. That's plenty. Okay, great. Thank you. That's it, Chair.
Got the thumbs up.
And Justin.
Okay, Mr. Cummings, did you have your hand up? Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to express my appreciation for getting that summer. It's just great to see how much funding is going towards all these critical needs around restoration and access, and it's just really great to see it all summed up here. So just want to express my appreciation of all that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Evan. Great report.
Okay, and I'm going to do the next two items from over here just so I can not be sitting there staring directly at the board chair the whole time. So the next one is the 2024 climate bond and the work of the Coastal Conservancy to adapt to climate change. And there is a PowerPoint for this item, 4B. Great. So I'm going to provide a summary of what is in the 2024 climate bond for the State Coastal Conservancy, the purposes of the funding, the relationship to our strategic plan that Evan Sloan just presented, the relationship to our project selection criteria, and how our funding, the Conservancy's funding, fits in within the overall 2024 climate bond program. Oh, okay. Great. All right. So in November 2024, the voters of California passed the climate bond, Prop 4, by nearly 60%. The total amount in the climate bond is $10 billion. $1.2 billion of that total is for coastal resilience, and that's the program that most of the Conservancy funds are within, with some smaller amounts for the Conservancy in the wildfire resilience program and in the safe drinking water, drought, flood, and water resilience program. So the Coastal Conservancy programs, the two largest are the Coastal Flood Management Program with $350 million and the Coastal Resilience Program, which has $330 million for the entire coast and another $85 million for San Francisco Bay. The smaller programs, we have $33.5 million of wildfire resilience funding, $75 million for dam removal, with our highest priority dam removal project being Matilaha. And then we have three geographic programs in the bond, each at $25 million. West Coyote Hills in Fullerton, Coyote Valley in Santa Clara County, and the Santa Ana River. So this is a little bit of a repeat from what Evan already presented, but these climate bond programs for the Conservancy all fit within and align well with our existing 2023 through 2027 strategic plan. So again, the four goal areas for grants and projects are to increase equity, so projects that benefit systemically excluded communities in California Native American tribes, our Enjoy the Coast program to support access projects and programs, our Protect and Restore the Coast goal, so that's really focused on protection and restoration of habitats, working lands, wildlife corridors, et cetera, and our Climate Ready goal, which is focused on particularly on wildfire resilience and sea level rise adaptation. So now a little bit more detail on some of the programs within the climate bond. The $350 million for coastal flood management, I am going to read the language in the bond because I think it's specific and helpful. It has a stated purpose of coastal and combined flood management projects and activities for developed shoreline areas, including areas with critical community infrastructure, including but not limited to transportation and port infrastructure at risk of current flooding and flooding due to sea level rise. Funds shall be allocated to multiple benefit projects that improve public safety, including shoreline resilience projects designed to address flooding, sea level rise, and shoreline stability that include engineering with nature or nature-based features. These funds shall be available to local agencies as matching funds for federally funded coastal flood risk management and flood risk management projects. So this $350 million, just to summarize, is very focused on coastal and combined flood risk management in developed areas. The second large program is the Coastal Resilience Program. And again, that's a total of $415 million, with $85 million of that specifically for the San Francisco Bay Area. And I'm not going to read that whole section, but what I would say is it is a broader program. And the bulleted points here are some of activities or project areas that are listed within the bond that this funding could be allocated towards. So really anything within our Climate Ready program in our legislation, protecting and restoring lands and habitats, natural infrastructure for coastal flooding, restoring coastal land on formerly fossil-fueled power plants, importantly, trails and public access facilities and lower-cost coastal accommodations, our Explore the Coast Overnight program, are also both listed in the bond for the Coastal Resilience Program. All right, and then there's, again, $33.5 million for the Coastal Conservancy for Wildfire Resilience. That's very focused on forest health, watershed improvement, and there's mention of workforce development in that section. The bond also has a strong focus on addressing equity and benefiting systemically excluded communities. 40% of the funding in the bond overall is intended to benefit disadvantaged communities and vulnerable populations, and at least 10% must benefit severely disadvantaged communities. As Evan mentioned, two-thirds of the Conservancy's funding over the last 2 years has benefited systemically excluded communities. The definitions are different in the bond versus in our strategic plan, but we feel confident that we can meet these Prop 4 goals for disadvantaged communities and severely disadvantaged communities. So the governor's budget for FY25-26 came out last month, and it includes approximately $110 million total for the State Coastal Conservancy. So the first climate bond funding would become available to the Coastal Conservancy in July once the governor signs the budget. So we could potentially be bringing climate bond projects to the board starting in September with that board meeting. We will be doing a public webinar on March 17th, which is St. Patrick's Day, by the way, with detailed information about applying for grants. So we are working now on getting the word out about that webinar. And then the governor's budget also included a rollout plan for the bond for future years. And the Conservancy's funding, particularly in those two large pots, we really anticipate it spreading out over 10 years. But the final decisions for each year are obviously made through the budget process. I did just want to highlight Secretary Crowfoot's principles for the climate bond, which he has been communicating with all of the agencies and departments within the Resources Agency. First off, strategic, really focused on statewide priorities under, did I go? I think I've gone forward one slide. Focused on statewide priorities under statewide plans like Pathways to 30 by 30 and Outdoors for All. Coordination among the state agencies and departments who are managing climate bond programs. Multi-benefit projects. Making sure the funding is accessible for communities that applying for and receiving state grant funds is as barrier-free as possible, and then transparency about our decisions and the projects and the outcomes. And I think these principles, they definitely resonate for me and for the work of the Coastal Conservancy. I think we have been working to do these five priorities for many years. And we are looking forward to increasing our coordination and work with other agencies and departments. So some of the details of the funding, and we're going to go more into this on the public webinar, the eligibility for conservancy funding for climate bond money is spelled out in our enabling legislation, so you can see the who is eligible. And then the types of activities that we fund are based on our enabling legislation, our strategic plan, and on the language within the climate bond. So the board adopted project selection criteria in September 2021, and we intend to use those for the evaluation and selection of climate bond projects. We have basic eligibility criteria. These are really yes, no criteria. And the first one is consistency with the funding source, so needing to be consistent with what is in the climate bond. And then the next set of criteria are focused on how we go about evaluating and selecting projects. And I won't read these, but you see these each in each staff recommendation. We are describing how projects meet the selection criteria. And we are going to continue with our same application process for the climate bond funding. We have an ongoing application process. So the vast majority of our funding, except for Explore the Coast and Coastal Stories and our Sea Otter grants, are done on a rolling basis with ongoing applications. And we match applications to the appropriate funding source. So applicants don't have to apply, they don't have to select which funding source. They are applying for us for projects that meet our strategic plan, project selection criteria, et cetera. There are no deadlines with this, and staff are available to discuss projects with potential applicants. We have a simple pre-application that's very similar to Wildlife Conservation Board's pre-application. And just to point out, WCB and the Coastal Conservancy, we have a very similar application process. And then we invite full applications if we are intending to move the project forward to the board. And finally, I just wanted to point out that there are many other programs in the bond that will likely benefit coastal California and the types of projects that we support. So these are just some of the highlights. Again, Wildlife Conservation Board, over $1 billion for 30 by 30 wildlife crossings. Resources Agency, there's funding for urban greening, tribal programs, et cetera. Department of Fish and Wildlife has funding for islands and fisheries work. State Parks has funding for forest health and for sea level rise and for parks. Ocean Protection Council has $210 million for sea level rise and climate resilience. And then I just put at the bottom, plus CAL FIRE and the Conservation Corps and all the other conservancies. So it would take many, many slides to describe all the programs within Prop 4, but I just wanted to make sure it was clear. We are one part of this overall bond. And then super cute picture of sea otters. So any questions on the climate bond?
Through the chair, just real quick. Thank you, Amy. I appreciate it. You know, I think, you know, the passage of this is helpful in moving many of the existing projects and opening the door for a lot of additional projects across the state and across the conservancies and through CNRA and others. And I'm happy that Coastal has received, you know, a significant actually amount of that funding. I just had a quick question, and of course, you know, I know you read a snippet, and I probably should know this answer, and I don't. And let me caveat this question with saying that, you know, finance obviously has been continuing to work on trying to identify impacts on federal funding right now. And obviously within the climate space is one of those identified areas that we're still working to try to figure out if we're going to see an impact. When you talked about the $350 million on the coastal resiliency piece and that it is mostly low, or it shall be used for local matching funds to federal funds, shall meaning it's allowable, but we can do additional, not required, correct?
Yeah, that's okay. Our understanding, that okay. It's additional, not required.
Great. Okay. I just wanted to make sure, because, as we see a lot of movement at the federal level, I think we're still trying to ensure that we can continue to move our state funding forward for critical projects. So I wanted to verify that, because I know that was the last line you read, and appreciate that. So anyway, but great work, and I think we're looking forward to continuing to see a lot of new projects coming in. So wonderful. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
Justin, did you have your hand raised? I'm sorry, I didn't see. Okay, go ahead.
Yes, I do. Thank you for that question, because I actually had that same concern, especially since here in Santa Cruz County, we're already seeing some of our funding getting frozen on some critical infrastructure projects. So just that it's helpful that it's not dependent upon the federal match. I did have just one question for clarification. Well, I have two questions, but one for clarification. So with the $85 million going to San Francisco Bay for coastal resilience, that, if I heard it correctly in the presentation, that's not going to one specific organization. It's going to be competitive across the Bay Area for the different jurisdictions and agencies and institutions that are out there?
Yes, it will be competitive for projects in the Bay Area.
Great. And then I guess the last thing, if you could send any kind of like links or advertising materials for the March 15th webinar, that'd be helpful. I can help get it out to folks around Santa Cruz and within our areas. So,
great. We will do that. We'll send it out to the board for the March 17th webinar.
Thanks.
Yeah. I did just want to add on the federal front, we have over 40 federal grants, and we're definitely following what's happening and are concerned about our existing grants and about applying for future grants, particularly through NOAA and US EPA and the US Fish and Wildlife Service. We do also have projects with the US Army Corps of Engineers. They typically seem to do okay regardless of administration, but it is very concerning.
Mr. Cash.
Oh, Mr. Cash.
Yep. I just wanted to say thanks. That was a great presentation, and we really look forward to seeing these projects roll out. Since you mentioned all the other programs that are in the bond, we do have a listserv that we're allowing people to sign up for to receive information not only on the Coastal Conservancy's programs, but on all the other programs. It's at www.bit.ly/climatebondupdates. And And there's also an email if folks want to send questions about the climate bond. It's climatebond2024@resources.ca.gov. Thanks.
Thank you, Brian. All right, if that's it on the climate bond, then we're going to move to an action item on the executive officer report. So Chairman Bosco asked that we include a reaffirmation of our commitment to justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion. And we've prepared a resolution for the board to consider and vote on. And I guess I would say in normal times, this would be self-evident, but these don't seem to be normal times. So the resolution describes the adoption of our JEDI guidelines in September 2020, the adoption of our strategic plan in December of 2022, which includes prioritizing equity, and the adoption of our project selection criteria in September 2021 that incorporates recommendations of the JEDI guidelines. So I'll pass it over to Chair Bosco to move this as an action item.
Thank you, Amy. And I asked Amy to put this on the agenda, and I'll admit out of a certain sense of guilt that I've had over a few years. And that is because when this item first came up a little less than 4 years ago, I actually said to Amy, why do we need a statement like this? I said, you know, everything in this statement is self-evident. And this is what we do naturally, and we always have done this, and we always will do this. We don't need a statement. In fact, I remember saying that even our most cherished document as a country, the Declaration of Independence that people have fought and died for, says that it is self-evident that we're equal and we have a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I said, isn't that enough? Well, in thinking about it a few years later, it isn't enough. And we're starting to see these very values attacked regularly. And although maybe we're created equal, there seem to be a group of people now, most of whom are very well off, who are trying to see to it that we may be created equal, but we're not going to be going through life equal. And now the words justice, equity, diversity, inclusion, are being scrubbed from the federal code. I just saw where the head of the Department of Defense, the recent head of it, is having these words taken out of all of the manuals that our service people have to read and abide by. And this is serious stuff. You know, it isn't just the, aw shucks, look what the president did today. It's a concerted effort, I believe, to deny even the most basic rights that Americans have. And of course, this hits hardest with the very people that we've been talking about in Amy's report, and that is the poorest, the people that don't have the resources that they can have a nice steak dinner at Mar-a-Lago. The people who may not even have gone to the coast in their entire life. We've had many examples of that. And unfortunately, these are the people that are being attacked the most, some of whom are even being excluded from the country and forcibly ripped apart from their friends and family. So, long sermon, but that's why I asked that this be put on the agenda, because I think the conservancy of all places is one where we should stand up for these things. And I do believe we stand up for them, but I don't think they're self-evident. And for that reason, I want to move approval of the agenda item. And also, I am happy if anyone else wants to comment. Oh.
I would very much like to say something, please.
Ms. Sterling?
Yes, I want to say, first of all, thank you very much, Doug, Mr. Chair. This makes me feel extraordinarily proud to be on this board. And I so appreciate us taking this initiative in these times. It's actually, amazingly, a brave act. And so if there is a motion to be made, I would be honored to make it.
Thank you. Ms. Sterling moves. Ms. Perrault, do you want a second?
Second.
Is there any other comments?
Mr. Cummings has his hand.
Oh, Mr. Cummings, yes.
I can just make a quick comment. I think you summed it up pretty eloquently, Chair. So I just want to appreciate you bring this forward and for the statement that you made. And I think to Commissioner Sterling's point, it is a really brave act because we see a lot of, you know, jurisdictions and a lot of companies that are walking all those policies back. And I think that, you know, having had this commission make that commitment and reaffirm that commitment, you know, under a lot of threats from the federal government really just shows that we truly stand for this. So just want to appreciate you bringing this forward and for the board support on this item.
Thank you. Any other comments?
We have one public comment from Walter Lamb.
Okay, Mr. Lamb.
Thank you, board members. I just want to say that I very much, the Land Trust very much, I represent the Biden Wetlands Land Trust, and we very much appreciate and support this. It is necessary for all the reasons that everybody has just stated. Chair Bosco, I didn't know when I first saw this that you were the one who requested this to be added. And so I just want to say that I appreciate that you did that. Not only that you asked for this to be added, but that you were willing to acknowledge that, you know, your own views have evolved. And I think anyone who is, you know, over the age of 30, you know, probably has gone through that recognition, you know, that we were maybe looking with a certain lens and, you know, came to acknowledge the need for this kind of language to lead for this kind of programs. The Land Trust, we just posted our own reaffirmation. I think the reaffirmation is extremely important, you know, given what's going on. And I just think from a logistical standpoint, we're going to need to think through what happens when we have state funding that requires, you know, acknowledging these things and looking at these things, and then federal funding, which prohibits that exact same thing. And, you know, US EPA was mentioned. US EPA is a funder of three different national estuary programs in California, San Francisco Bay, Morro Bay, and the Santa Monica Bay. And we were alarmed because as soon as the US EPA, I think just 2 days ago, came out with their anti-DEI rhetoric, you know, we looked at those pages, and the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Foundation, or called the Bay Foundation, their page went dark. And I personally found that to be very alarming. We're trying to get more information to find out why that is, but we're going to need to be very vigilant in this. This DEI is something that is not just for fairness, it's for effectiveness. It's for addressing all the threats facing our planet and making sure we have everyone in that fight. So thank you for doing this. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Lamb. Are there any other comments?
Right. We have one more from the panelists, Heidi Moore.
Hello. I'm the Director of Tribal Government Affairs at the Blue Lake Rancheria, small tribal government in Northern California. We are the recipient of an award that you just approved in your consent agenda. And I want to thank you for that. It is incredibly enabling for the tribe to receive this land back. It's related to just incredible cultural resources and diverse species. I just want to thank you for your courage in making this motion. I know that your strategic plan priorities adopt equity and inclusion as a core principle, but this motion is very inspirational, and I'm going to be excited to share it with all the tribal partners that we are connected with, and just again, absolutely appreciate your courage in a time that has led marginalized, historically marginalized communities to exist in fear. So thank you for providing hope and a bright light.
Thank you, Ms. Moore. All right. Is that the conclusion of your report, Ms.? Oh, okay.
Yeah, there needs to be a vote, and then we have one more item on.
We're voting on the resolution then. Okay. Will you please call the roll? Yeah.
Mr. Cummings?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye. Thank you. I think, as everyone has commented, that this will be a time where we'll have to use our courage, because we could see very practical applications of what we're talking about. Okay, yes. Do you have one more item, Amy?
Yeah, 2025 has been eventful, and the final item is a report from Elena Egger and Mario Sandoval from the Mountains Recreation and Conservation Authority on the impacts of the Palisades fire on Malibu access projects, which the Coastal Conservancy has long been involved in. And before turning it over to Elena and Mario, I do want to just recognize that other areas in Los Angeles were also impacted by fires, and our work within the Coastal Conservancy, we can work in coastal watersheds. So we can do work beyond the Malibu coast, but we just have this long history of supporting these accessways and wanted to get an update on them. So I'm hoping Elena and Mario are there and ready, and they have a PowerPoint.
We do. Thank you, Amy, very much. Good morning, Chair Bosco, Conservancy members, staff, and members of the public. I'm Elena Egger, and today I'm here on behalf of MRCA's Coastal Access Program. But I've been a long-term staff person at the Coastal Conservancy for some 30 years. So I've brought all the things that Doug Bosco has just talked about with me to Los Angeles and especially to Malibu. And I just want to acknowledge that kind of support and moving forward on equity issues, which our program does. So I'm here this morning with Coastal Access Deputy Mario Sandoval, and we appreciate the opportunity to present the coastal public access impacts of the Palisades fire in Malibu on MRCA and Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy's properties, many of which were transferred to us from the Coastal Conservancy in 2018. And as people who live and work in this landscape, I must acknowledge that our hearts break for Los Angeles right now, as it rains hard outside and causes all kinds of devastation from the wildfires that we've experienced recently. And we're turning to our partners like the Coastal Conservancy for support to face this trauma and contend with the fire's impacts. Next slide, please. Shown here is a quick view of our Malibu coastal landscape, public ownership and management. The area crosshatched and outlined in pink is the Palisades fire footprint within our Malibu Coastal Access Program area. Along the 21-mile Malibu coastal landscape, we have four beach, open beach access sites, the Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy, or SMMC, and MRCA hold the lion's share with 21 that have increased from 10 to 21 in the past 6 years, Los Angeles County has 16 state parks, 5, and Caltrans 1, which is an overlook, coastal overlook only. Of these managing entities, MRCA is the only agency developing 17 new public access sites in Malibu. And since 2013, we've worked with your staff to expand Malibu public access, especially under the Malibu Coastal Access Public Works Plan and MRCA Coastal Conservancy Project. The Palisades Fire destroyed several of these sites in the Public Works Plan, substantially changing the site conditions and warranting a new site evaluation. We also draw your attention on this map to SMMC MRCA Coastal Parkland. That's a little different than the coastal accessways that Amy mentioned, where MRCA's coastal program made recent acquisitions and improvements to support the 73-plus mile coastal slope trail, which is the California Coastal Trail in Malibu. And it's shown here in blue on your on this map with three overnight lower-cost coastal accommodation in the in campgrounds, and they're the only public campgrounds in the city of Malibu. Coastal Conservancy funded the planning for one of these campgrounds, the Malibu Bluffs, and the land acquisition for another campground, the second campground, at Ramirez Canyon Park. Next slide, please. The Palisades Fire footprint is in pink, affecting 8 coastal parks and 9 beaches and accessways, and burned a whopping 23,448 acres in the Pacific Palisades, City of Los Angeles, unincorporated LA County, and the eastern section of the City of Malibu. Next slide, please. The Palisades Fire's point of ignition began the morning of January 7th in Topanga State Park. There have been some erroneous public statements made that the fire originated on SMMC or MRCA property, and this is simply untrue. Next slide, please. The Palisades Fire impacted these coastal properties managed and or held by MRCA and SMMC. With the exception of Temescal Gateway Park, the Palisades Fire affected only the wildland areas in our other 7 coastal parks, with no loss of any park structures, with the exception of public amenities like signage. But unfortunately, the Palisades Fire damaged most of our beaches and accessways in eastern Malibu. Next slide, please. MRCA Fire Division, which started in the 1990s, actively defended and saved public land and property during the Palisades Fire. The historic Temescal, we say it a little different down there than up here, Canyon Conference and a Retreat Center, the site of the West Coast's earliest and largest Chautauqua community, which was a social and cultural movement that originated in New York in the 1870s, was jeopardized by the fire coming south from Topanga State Park. Next slide, please. While there was some property loss, the MRCA's fire division, along with MRC park staff, saved historic buildings such as Stewart Hall, Dining Hall, and for you, those of you who know that facility, the classrooms and residences, including the 103-year-old Chautauqua manager's house. Next slide, please. We're now going to turn to our most eastern beach accessways affected by the Palisades Fire on Las Tunas Beach. It's a 6-foot accessway with a 3-foot easement owned by MRCA and a three-foot deed restriction, which are on 2 adjacent residential properties. You see that to the right, with some serious encroachments that were eliminated entirely by the Palisades Fire, meaning that we now need to re-examine how we can construct this beach accessway. Next slide, please. Here you can see this accessway as seen from PCH before and after the Palisades Fire. The accessway has been blocked by private development for nearly 58 years. Next slide, please. The loss of the residential development along Las Tunas Beach reveals a view of the Malibu coast that's not been seen in generations. And here you can see up coast from PCH. As the community of Las Tunas Beach begins to rebuild, we expect to provide this required public beach access way to ensure that there's safe access to this beach for all. Next slide, please. Moving to the next one, up coast, we're going east to west at Miramar. The Palisades fire burned most of the coastal bluff vegetation, but did not impact the overlook bench or signage. And we're working with your staff to develop this MRCA fee property for beach access. Next slide, please. Miramar sustained just minor damage, as I mentioned, from the Palisades fire with some scorched fencing and vegetation on the slopes above the sandy beach. That's what you're seeing here on this slide. Next slide, please. Moonshadows accessway, dedicated in 1957 to LA County and transferred to MRCA in 2018. This beach access was immediately adjacent to what was the popular Moonshadows restaurant. The easement's 15 feet wide, but the improved vertical staircase only spanned 6 feet of the accessway easement, with lots of private development encroaching into it when it was transferred to MRC in 2020. Excuse me, I said 2018. Next slide, please. The fire destroyed these encroachments, but the accessway can be rebuilt to once again provide safe public access to Big Rock Beach and serve as an anchor for the community and public during rebuilding, an important theme of our presentation here. And now Mario Sandoval is going to take us through the rest of the impacts of the Palisades fire in Malibu. Thank you.
Thank you, Elena. As we continue to move west, we have the Maritime Rocks Accessway at Big Rock Beach. This was transferred from State Parks to the Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy in December of 2018. This unique pocket beach was popular with the public before. MRCA made some substantial access improvements, thanks to funding in part from the Coastal Conservancy as well. This work was completed in the summer of 2022 to provide safe access to the sandy beach and a shaded ADA overlook. Since its reopening in 2022, the site has served as a popular spot for bathers and for fishing. The Palisades fire destroyed much of the private development on Big Rock Beach, as you can see in these photos, including all of the homes for a quarter mile west of the Maritime Rocks accessway. The site itself was spared from any major damage, and the robust public improvements made of steel and concrete are relatively unscathed. We expect that this public access site can be back online once the next phase of debris removal is complete and road access to this part of the city is restored. Here is a before of the Palisades fire photo of the so-called Lent accessway to Las Flores Beach. For 36 years, the Coastal Conservancy held this public access easement, but the property owner actively thwarted any attempts at public access development at this site. This accessway became the Coastal Commission's first administrative penalty case, approving a $4.2 million penalty on this property and property owner. Here's the Lent property as seen from PCH before the Palisades fire. Note the gate spanning the 5-foot vertical easement between the two structures. And here's the same gate after the fire. While many of the private encroachments are now gone, you can see that the extensive cleanup and remediation necessary at Las Flores Beach will take some time. Here we'll show you two images before and after of La Costa Beach, about 1 year apart. Here you have the satellite image from January of 2024. And this is La Costa Beach shortly after the Palisades fire on January 9th, just 2 days after it ignited. Carbon La Costa did not suffer direct fire damage. However, Via La Costa Accessway did, and the La Costa Beach community suffered an immense loss of homes, as you saw in the previous image. This is a before and after view of the Via La Costa accessway. Here's another location where for some 48 years, a small accessway sandwiched between two residential homes remained unavailable for public access to La Costa Beach. The Palisades fire destroyed the two residents on either side of this deed-restricted accessway. Here's another view of Via La Costa before and after. And here's the beachside view of Via La Costa. As you can see, it's a very minor change in grade from the roadway to the sandy beach. And we hope to continue working with the Coast Commission's enforcement staff to finally bring this important accessway online. In May of last year, the MRCA renamed this accessway, commonly known as the Geffen Accessway to Carbon Beach, as Via Linda. This was to celebrate the public service of the Coast Commission's public access manager, Linda Lachlan, seen here celebrating with some of her colleagues back in May. As you can see, the Palisades fire did extensive damage to the private home, but the 9-foot concrete pathway spared much of the accessway improvements and residential development immediately to the west. Once the site is cleaned up and remediated for any hazards, we expect to reopen this accessway to Carbon Beach. I'm going to see if this link works on this slide. It's a short video posted by the City of Malibu. Actually, it seems like the link is no longer working, so I'll just describe what the video is supposed to show. One second. So the short clip was posted on the City of Malibu's social media platforms, including Instagram, and it shows the existing Via Linda accessway, providing access for US EPA staff, the California Conservation Corps, conducting phase one cleanups on both the PCH side and on the beach side of these private homes, putting in best BMPs for water and to prevent any sort of hazardous material in the upcoming rains or the rains we're experiencing now. As many public agencies begin to look towards rebuilding, we also have a long road ahead to begin this phase of cleanup and site remediation funded by both FEMA and Cal OES. But as we stated at many of these access sites, future site evaluations and subsequent designs are necessary to bring them online for the public. The Mountains Recreation and Conservation Authority and the Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy welcomes the Coastal Conservancy's partnership in the restoration of all community assets, including rebuilding our public property interests for safe public access to this magnificent coast. Please let us know if you have any questions, and we thank you for your time.
Great. Thank you, Elena and Mario, and that concludes the executive officer report.
There it is. Okay. Thank you very much. The MRCA, of course, has been our partner in many of these things. When I think of all of the lawyers and the courtrooms and the agony over these little slippage places that people can go through to get to the coast, and then Mother Nature comes through and unfortunately just changes the whole landscape completely. Can I ask a question, and maybe Mr. Cummings would know the answer to this. Do these people have to get Coastal Commission permits to rebuild?
That is a great question. And it's complicated too. We've been trying to navigate the governor's executive orders, and we met with the City of Malibu last Friday, maybe it was Friday before, when we were in Southern California for the Coastal Commission meeting. And our understanding is that the City of Malibu is really going to be responsible for overviewing kind of the building plans and designs. They have mentioned that they're, concerned about coastal access as well and the kind of past encroachments. But the Coastal Commission itself, for example, when it comes to the city of LA who doesn't have a coastal development permit, we won't really, it's, we can provide limited guidance and even limited guidance as it relates to the city of Malibu. So it's, we're all still trying to better understand what role we play with the governor's orders, but they made it pretty clear that we're supposed to have a very limited scope of involvement in all of this.
But I assume the easements that exist would remain even despite the fire.
That was actually one of my questions, and that's actually been one of my concerns. I was going to bring up with Mountain Resource Conservancy Agency, because I think one of the big concerns that, and we had the same presentation at our Coastal Commission meeting, and afterwards we were having conversations, and I think that's one of our major concerns as well, is what's to stop someone who goes to redevelop and them from building back on the encroachments if they can build like for like on the same footprint, and or if they can expand, what keeps them from further encroaching onto these areas. And so I share the same concern.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I may answer or add in a little bit about the things MRCA and the Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy are doing to protect its pro their property interests. If I may.
Go ahead, Elena.
Thank you. We are doing new surveys with surveyor marks actually on PCH, so the monument will be embedded in the concrete or the asphalt on PCH to demark our property interests in Eastern Malibu. And this is to avoid confusion that we may have from some of the things that were just mentioned. So we are actively, and I we'll defer to Mario, but I think next week we'll be out in the area putting those surveying marks in, even during the cleanup. So those are the practical things that we're trying to do to preserve the public's ability to get to the beach in Malibu.
Thank you. Okay, Amy, that's it for your report. It was a great report. Thank you. A lot of information for us to assimilate, for sure.
Ms. Sterling
May I
still has her
ask a
hand raised.
question?
Yes, Ms. Sterling.
Thank you very much. I don't please tell me if this is the appropriate time. Besides the access question, would this be a good time to address the runoff question from the debris into the ocean, into the waterways in the ocean, which I'm sure we're all very concerned about?
Yes, I am hoping Elena or Mario could speak to that.
Sure, happy to do that. So with the rainstorms that we're experiencing, I'm keeping close watch on all of the advisory warnings. The city of Malibu prophylactically evacuated in all of the burn areas, and that includes the Palisade Fire, but also the former two fires that we experienced earlier in the fall. So people are not in harm's way, but their property may be affected from the mudslides. And as far as I know right now, as it rains very heavily outside, I don't know if you could hear that, but it's storming, and sandbags were employed. Kenny of LA did a lot of work. The cleanup crews have suspended, of course, their debris cleanup right now until the rains subside. So we've done, I think, collectively as a community, the best we can do given the upcoming atmospheric river that's bringing a lot of rain to Southern California.
Yeah, and a factor also will be sea level rise. Even though climate change is being scrubbed from the federal books, I would think that sea level rise is going to affect the rebuilding of this whole area and the permitting for the rebuilding, I would guess. It's a big job. It's going to be a long
time. If I may, I think, Ms. Sterling, was asking about some hazardous debris and runoff. I was able to pull up the video from the city of Malibu if you want to see that, so you can see how multiple agencies are coordinating to kind of prevent that in advance of the rains that were coming this week. Here you can see the California Conservation Corps and US EPA staff bringing in metal stakes, wattles, sandbags, just kind of prepping the areas on the beach side to try and hold back some of the runoff that was going to be coming off of many of these debris piles. As you can see, it was all hands on deck the last couple of weeks in the city of Malibu and in the Palisades footprint. Obviously, they're doing their best to try and mitigate some of the worst impacts of this runoff coming into our waterways, going into the ocean. But local entities, the LA County Public Health Department, has been issuing water safety protocols based on this, closing beaches, limiting beach access within the burn scar, and advising people to stay out of the water. As there's only so much that they can do to prevent some of that runoff from entering the Santa Monica Bay. So hopefully some of that did help, but I share your concern, and I'm hoping that this gets mitigated as we receive more rain.
Does that answer your question, Ms. Sterling?
It does. I also want to, first of all, I want to give a shout out to the California Conservation Corps. I think they're just doing amazing work. And I'm very impressed by that. And also an organization, Heal the Bay down in Southern California has been actively on the water testing the water quality. And they're the first nonprofit to be doing so. So they deserve a shout out.
Great. Okay, I think we'll move on now to the project. Pardon?
We have two more hands.
Every time I want to move on, you interrupt. Okay.
Yes.
From the public?
From Mr. Cummings.
Oh, well, of course. Mr. Cummings, go ahead.
I had one quick question. I'm just curious how quickly y'all are going to be able to rebuild, and if there's any opportunity potentially for funding to be able to be allocated towards the rebuild process. I guess my big worry is that, you know, some of those folks who lost their houses will have the resources to probably rebuild much more quickly, and just, you know, the potential for conflict between blocking access and people rebuilding is just a concern. Especially since a lot of these people are well-resourced. So I'm just wondering what that kind of timeline looks like and if you all are able to get out in front and start rebuilding more quickly.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I can
yes,
answer that
Elena,
question.
Yes, Elena, go ahead.
Thank you. Yes, we are day three, I think, we were on the ground when everything was closed, checking out what we could start to do. And we have our team of engineers and designers already engaged. So we are, as I said a few minutes ago, even with our surveyors, we're ahead of the game. Most people who lost their houses have to wait for the cleanup to happen. If it's on private land, there's two stages of that, and you probably know, but EPA takes the hazardous wastes away, and then the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers does the actual debris cleanup. If you have public property, you don't have that process. So we've hired independently, and it will be funded by FEMA ultimately, but we have private contractors removing debris from our access ways as we speak, maybe not in the rain, but yesterday. But anyway, we're ahead of it. And for all the reasons that you, Dr. Cummings, had articulated a minute ago, it will be very difficult, I think, if we were to wait to do these things when we're competing for services that are needed to, like services, residential development, accessway development. We use the same suite of experts and consultants. So we're on it, is what I can say.
Great.
Yeah.
That's very encouraging. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do we have one other comment? No? All right, well, why don't we move on then to item five? We're going to start on our project portion of the agenda, and Megan Cooper will present that. Megan?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Conservancy. Today, staff recommends the Conservancy authorize disbursement of up to $2 million to the City of Anaheim for the construction of a 3.3-acre nature park to restore natural habitat and provide recreational opportunities along the Santa Ana River in Orange County. The proposed project is located in the City of Anaheim and sits between the Santa Ana River Trail and the Angel Stadium. Hi. Turn the lights down.
There we go.
Oh, except now I can't see. That's all right. I got it. Sorry. Let's see. Between the Santa Ana River Trail and Angel Stadium, the 3.3-acre parcel is currently vacant and fenced off from the public. Located within the dense and rapidly growing Platinum District of Anaheim, there are currently zero park acres per 1,000 people within a half mile of this site. The nearest park to serve this growing community is a neighboring city more than half a mile away, is in a neighboring city. This parcel is surrounded on nearly all sides by vast amounts of pavement, increasing the urban heat island effect and providing an unwelcoming environment for residents and wildlife. The River Park will provide much needed green space and will be the first completed phase of the OC Riverwalk project, serving as the official southern gateway for this entire project. As a reminder, the OC Riverwalk is a multi-benefit project to transform the Santa Ana River corridor in the City of Anaheim to improve the ecology of the river and provide public access. Funded by the Conservancy, the OC Riverwalk is currently in the planning phase. These photos are of the current conditions of the site, which is a bare dirt area that is fenced off and inaccessible. The River Park will provide Santa Ana River Trail users and adjacent communities with new recreational opportunities in this densely populated area, as well as direct access to the Santa Ana River and the Santa Ana River Trail. The River Park will be the city's 68th park, and will include features such as shaded seating areas, walking trails, fitness equipment, a small amphitheater, nature-themed play spaces, and educational installations like interpretive signage and art. Sustainability features include bioswales, pervious walking trails, native vegetation, as well as preserving the existing mature trees that are on the site. Planning for this project involved 7 public workshops, surveys, and social media campaigns to solicit community input, develop park design, and select park amenities. This concerted effort to engage diverse stakeholders and the surrounding community resulted in a design that reflects the needs and desires of local community members. Thank you for your consideration, and I'm here if you have any questions.
Okay, are there any questions for Megan? Seems like a lot in just 3 acres, isn't it? All right, do I hear a motion that we approve item 5?
So moved.
Okay, Ms. Perrault moves. Mr. Hallisey seconds that we approve item 5. Paul, will you please call the roll?
Yes. Mr. Cummings?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 5 is approved.
Okay, that item's approved. We'll now move on to item 6, the Great Redwood Trail up on the North Coast, and that will be presented by Louisa Morris. Louisa?
Thank you, Chair Bosco and members of the board.
I am fearful about turning down the lights because then I can't see my notes, but I think I'm going to try and do it. Okay.
Oh. There you go.
Oh, thank you.
Leave it to Michael.
It's always good to be useful.
Thank you.
He probably has his Bowie knife there, too.
He just likes the logo with the elk on it, I think. So my name is Louisa Morris, and I will be presenting the Great Redwood Trail Agency Sonoma County Interagency Agreement Project. Staff recommends authorization to disperse up to $5 million to the County of Sonoma to augment funding for engineering and environmental services, planning and design, tribal and public outreach. Actually, we're staying on the first slide. I'm not quite to this one yet. organizational development, advancement of the rail banking process, technical support, staffing for the Great Redwood Trail Agency, developing the Great Redwood Trail, and other costs and services as may be required for the advancement of the Great Redwood Trail in Mendocino, Trinity, and Humboldt counties. Next slide, please. The GRTA, the Great Redwood Trail Agency, is funded by the state of California via fiscal year 21-22 and fiscal year 24-25 appropriations. In fiscal year 21-22, $3.35 million was appropriated to GRTA. The funds for the current $5 million authorization are derived from an appropriation to the Conservancy in the Budget Act of 2024. It's Senate Bill 108, Section 111, for a, quote, grant to the Great Redwood Trail Agency for the purposes of developing the Great Redwood Trail, end quote. These funds are currently administered by Sonoma County via an interagency agreement. Next slide, please. GRTA funding in the Sonoma County Interagency Agreement is being used for the following Great Redwood Trail purposes: engineering and environmental services, planning and design, public outreach, including tribal collaboration and relationship building, organizational development, advancement of the rail banking process, technical support, staffing for the Great Redwood Trail Agency, developing the Great Redwood Trail, and other costs and services as may be required related to the Great Redwood Trail. Next slide. So to date, the Conservancy and the Great Redwood Trail Agency partnership is going very well. Since its inception in 2022, our agencies have worked together on rail banking, staffing, and the master plan and programmatic environmental impact report. Here are some highlights of our collaboration. Rail banking has been completed for the 170-mile section from Willits North to Samoa, and work is underway to rail bank the southern 50 miles from Willits South to the Mendocino-Sonoma County line. The Great Redwood Trail Agency has hired two staff, an executive director, Elaine Hogan, in January 2024, and operations manager, Bridget Nichols, in November 2024. Both of those staff are full-time. And GRTA is currently advertising for a financial development manager. The Conservancy has two full-time Great Redwood Trail project managers, Hannah Barti and myself. The Great Redwood Trail draft master plan and programmatic EIR are currently being developed. The master plan was circulated for 90 days of public comment in spring and summer of 2024, and the programmatic EIR will be released for public comment this April, along with an updated master plan which is responsive to the public comments received. Next slide, please. Okay, oh good, no, back one. Thank you. The Coastal Conservancy, the Great Redwood Trail Agency, and GRT project partners are working with tribal governments and tribal communities with ancestral lands near and on the Great Redwood Trail right-of-way to build trust and better understand and address California Native American tribes and tribal community members' concerns about the Great Redwood Trail project. We know that tribes have many concerns about this project, and the GRT project team intends to articulate and address these concerns at a high level in the Great Redwood Trail Master Plan and Programmatic Environmental Impact Report. In the course of developing the draft master plan, the GRT's team sent out two sets of letters to nearly 30 tribal governments and tribal community groups in 2022 and 2023, made two presentations to the Northern California Tribal Chairpersons Association, presented a webinar on the project to tribes, attended four workshops and made presentations to tribal groups and tribal governments, tabled at tribal events, and did government-to-government consultations and 101 outreach. We'll continue this level of effort for the life of the project, including planning, construction, and long-term operations and maintenance. The programmatic environmental impact report will include specific project requirements and mitigation measures, which were developed in consultation with tribes via the AB 52 and an extended outreach process. Proposed mitigation measures call for cultural resource surveys to be conducted as part of the trail planning processes and trail design and construction to take all feasible measures to avoid or minimize impacts to these resources. This work will be done in close collaboration with tribes. GRTA continues to have ongoing conversations with tribes to collaborate on the identification of sensitive cultural resources and work together to minimize potential impacts. And finally, on a project-specific level, not finally, but on this slide anyway, the GRTA and project partners will continue to work closely with tribes and tribal communities to listen, learn, honor, include, partner with, and where we can, restore access to sacred ancestral lands that are important to tribes. The next slide shows some information on a successful conservancy tribal collaboration. Please, next slide. At the Noyo Headlands, the Conservancy has worked with partners through intensive tribal consultation in the past to build trails in areas near sensitive tribal resources. An example is the Noyo Headlands Trail in Fort Bragg. This trail is in a very sensitive area to tribes. Tribes work closely with the city on the trail planning and design in a process that took over a year. Ground disturbance was minimized and other measures were taken to avoid impacts to cultural resources. And we hope to use and intend to use a similar approach on the GRT overall, as well as on specific segments. Next slide. The Great Redwood Trail is a trail and a watershed restoration project. Trail construction projects will also be watershed restoration projects. And this slide shows work done in December 2023 to remove a failed 10-foot diameter by 75-foot long crushed culvert from McNabb Creek at the railroad crossing, restoring over a mile of upstream habitat for fish passage. On the left, you can see the before failed culvert, and the orange utility line is a fiber optic cable that was miraculously not broken by the culvert failure. Railroad tracks and ties hung precariously about 15 to 20 feet above our heads. After the project was completed, you see the middle picture, fish and other aquatic wildlife, including western toads, whose eggs you can see in the lower right-hand corner, use the habitat in the area and upstream. And again, over a mile of habitat, which had been blocked by the railroad line and culvert, was reconnected to the Russian River. Next slide. Oh, one more thing about that last one. You don't have to go back, but that work was funded by the GRTA with general fund monies that were provided through a previous conservancy grant through the Sonoma County Interagency Agreement. So next steps for the GRTA include rail banking the southern 50-mile segment from the Mendocino-Sonoma County line to East Commercial Street in Willits, which is a statutory mandate of the agency. Continued organizational development, including staffing the organization, and I mentioned a hiring process is underway for a financial development manager, finalizing the master plan and releasing the programmatic EIR for public review and comment, and adopting both of those documents later this year. Continued relationship building and collaboration with tribes and tribal communities. Ongoing engineering, trail planning, and technical support. And finally, operations and maintenance and management of the GRTA right-of-way, including vegetation and property management, and dealing with railroad legacy issues and trash pickup. Thank you, Joel Gerwine, Carol Hart, and I believe Mary Sackett of the GRTA board and I are available to answer any questions you may have about this exciting project and collaboration.
Thank you. Can we have the lights on, I guess?
Thanks, Michael.
Just touch the screen. It's preset for one.
Thanks. Thank you so much for being on.
Oh, good. All right, are there any questions for Louisa? No? Are there any public comments?
We have no. Oh, we have one hand raised.
One hand raised? Whose hand is that?
Go ahead, Fraser.
Pardon?
Good morning, everyone. This is Fraser Haney. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to speak about the Great Redwood Trail today. I'm the executive director at the Wildlands Conservancy. I'm speaking in favor of both agenda items 6 and 7. Of course, 3 of our preserves, which the Conservancy helped acquire, are along the Eel River Canyon, and we're working actively to advance the vision of a Great Redwood Trail. Very eager to work with the GRTA to transform the dilapidated former railway into a jewel of Northern California. We've been very impressed with the dedicated work of the GRTA staff and its board. In a relatively short period of time, they've completed an incredible amount of work to understand the physical conditions, the restoration potential, like Louisa had pointed out, and the community concerns along the trail's length. The master plan for the trail, I think it was put together very fast and very well in draft, with the amount of detail and information, which has really helped make this a much more transparent process and driven a lot of public engagement. But perhaps most importantly, I want to applaud the efforts of the agency to open the channels of communication with tribes and tribal organizations regarding the trail. We recognize the gravity of the past atrocities that occurred in the region and the present importance of the cultural landscape of the Eel River Canyon. I'm certain that the funds that are being requested today are going to help with tribal outreach and this collaboration. And I'm sure that this effort's only going to deepen and become more detailed as we advance the planning efforts that Louisa presented on. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today, and I wish you all well in the storm out there.
Okay, are there any other comments?
We have one more. Mary, go ahead.
Good morning, Chair Bosco and the Conservancy members. My name's Mary Sackett, and I'm president of the Marin County Board of Supervisors and proud chair of the Great Redwood Trail Agency. And I just ask that today you authorize the disbursement of the $5 million to the Great Redwood Trail Agency to augment the work that we're doing. This funding will support critical engineering, environmental planning, and importantly, public outreach to bring this trail to life. It's not just a trail, it's a long-term investment in sustainable recreation, undoing past wrongs, environmental restoration, and really community connectivity for some isolated communities. I want to share with you all that tribal engagement is a huge priority of our board and is an essential part of all of our work. Since we've started this work and will continue to be incorporated as we move forward with each step. So I'm happy to answer any other questions, but really appreciate this item coming forward and ask for your support.
Okay, are there any questions for Supervisor Sackett? No, thank you for your comments. Michelle?
I'll go ahead and move the item, but before I do so, I want to just comment and hopefully make it clear if it's not clear, and maybe staff can address this. I appreciate the great lengths that we are going to ensure that there is very specific and intentional outreach to the tribal communities for this entire project, for both this item and the next item. I know that deal with the same area. I just want to make sure I understand for both of these items, and I can ask it at both items if that's preferable, but that we do have specific language as we are providing the disbursements of funds and then subsequently potentially the next grant, that part of a condition of receiving that funds from us is intentional tribal engagement and outreach. Am I correct in that? And if it's not, I hope it's something that should be.
Yeah, I will say on the next item, and we can talk more about this on the next item, but it is in the resolution that for Mendocino Land Trust to coordinate with tribes, and we will make sure it's in their work plan. But do you want to speak on the GRTA?
Thank you.
I believe it is also in the resolution for the GRTA. There is coordinating with California Native American tribes is one of the undertakings that the funding is for.
Great. I presume that was the case, and I know we had read through it, but I just, again, I think that this is something that is a clear priority as part of this project and as part of the subsequent one we're going to talk about. So I appreciate you just being very clear about that. And with that, Chair, I'll move the item.
Okay. Been moved and
we still have two raised hands.
Okay, why don't we get it?
I'll move the item after questions.
We have a motion and second on the floor, but let's go ahead with any comments.
First one is Mr. Cummings.
Yeah, I was going to move that in, but that's fine. But I just want to appreciate all the work that's gone into this. It seems like just looking at the agenda report, there's been a lot of investment in this over time, and this is going to really help move this project along. And I just really want to appreciate especially all the work that's gone into coordination with tribes. And I think it's a great example of how we can try to come together to, find a path forward. And so I just hope that can continue to happen along the way, and I'm going to be supporting this. So thank you.
Thank you.
Conrad, go ahead.
Yes, my name is Conrad Kramer. I'm the executive director of the Mendocino Land Trust, and I'm also speaking in support of items 6 and 7. We are the contractors on item 7. The Mendocino Land Trust has been around for almost 50 years, and we have 20 public access sites that we've opened on the coast, almost all of them with the help of the State Coastal Conservancy. So we're very grateful for that. Over the years, however, we've been uncomfortable with the fact that we've never been able to make much progress with public access projects inland. So we are delighted with this plan on the Great Redwood Trail. We are hoping to not only pursue item 6 in the years ahead, but other segments of the trail as well. We're also pleased that in this item 7, our trail segment north of Willits, that we will have funding from you to work with tribes. And we have had quite a bit of success in the last few years coordinating with tribes on tribal land returns. So we're really looking forward to that, and we take it seriously. About 4 years ago now, our board adjusted our mission to not just work on public access projects, but access to land projects for tribes. And so we are pleased to be working on that. And we'd like to continue that work, especially tribal access to the Eel River projects in the future. So we're definitely in support. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other comments? I'll make a quick comment. I know I don't look that old, but I've been involved with this railroad over 50 years, believe it or not. It's going way back to the 70s when we fought the Southern Pacific that wanted to abandon the rail and sell off the entire right-of-way to private developers, and going on from there when the Congress appropriated funds and set aside parts of the right-of-way. So it's been a long, long time, and I think in terms of the Coastal Conservancy, we are very, very proud to be a part of it. Carol Hart is here. Carol was the chair of the Coastal Commission and on our board for a period of time, and she's spent no end of time on this. And I also want to mention Senator McGuire. Somehow I see his fingerprints on this appropriation, but maybe I'm wrong. He has taken this on as a major task and has done a great job with it. Even though a lot of us have been involved in this a long time, it's made rapid progress only in the last few years, and that's to the credit of the people that are working on it now. So we have a motion and second that we approve item six, is it?
Yeah. Through the chair, I have...
Yes.
Yeah. I read from the second resolution for the Mendocino Land Trust grant, so I'd like to correct my statement, and I think because coordination with California Native American tribes is actually not in the resolution for this item. So thank you very much, Commissioner Perot, for bringing that up. And perhaps we could add it after public outreach to the resolution.
Yeah, so staff proposes.
Staff proposes.
Adding to the resolution after public outreach, comma, coordination.
With California, Native American tribes.
All right, so we'll amend my approval then.
I'll amend my motion then to include the amendment staff has recommended, adding in the tribal outreach. Thank you.
Good. I'll second. Okay, Mr. Halsey seconds that. So we have one more comment? Okay, good.
Ms. Sterling, go ahead.
I simply want to acknowledge that 50 years ago, Mr. Chair, you were a child prodigy.
A child problem. What's a child? Thank you. Is that the extent of your comment? Okay. All right. Paul, will you please call the roll?
Yes. Mr. Cummings?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Mr. Halsey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 6 is approved.
All right. Item 6 is approved, and we'll now move on to item 7. And are you all set for the item 7? Okay, good.
Good morning, almost afternoon. Chair Bosco and members of the board, again, my name is Louisa Morris, and I will be presenting the Great Redwood Trail Willits to Longvale Planning Project. Staff recommends the Conservancy authorize disbursement of up to $503,400,000 to the Mendocino Land Trust to undertake the Great Redwood Trail Willits to Longvale Planning Project, consisting of preparing resource studies and surveys, conducting outreach, coordinating with California Native American tribes, preparing 20% designs, and preparing environmental compliance documents for a 12.7-mile segment of the Great Redwood Trail in the city of Willits and unincorporated Mendocino County. Some of the state funding for the Great Redwood Trail has resulted in a draft master plan for the entire 231 miles managed by GRTA, and this April, the public draft PEIR will be released. The draft master plan was available for public comment from April 3rd to July 3rd, 2024, and the final master plan, incorporating changes made in response to public comment, will be considered for adoption later this year. In addition, the Conservancy Board has authorized funding for two GRT construction projects, one in Willits and another in Humboldt, and two GRT planning grants in the Eel River Canyon. At this meeting, for your consideration, well, is this planning grant and then the Sonoma County Interagency Agreement funds for GRTA, which were just approved. Next slide, please. I think that's here. Now we're all turning slides. The project will prepare trail plans for this 12.7-mile stretch along Outlet Creek. The work funded will prepare resource studies and surveys, conduct community outreach, coordinate with California Native American tribes, prepare 20% designs, and prepare environmental compliance documents. Completion of in-depth studies for this nearly 13-mile section of the GRT will provide information on tribal and cultural resources, biological resources, geofluvial issues, and structures, including bridges and tunnels. To complete the tribal and cultural resource studies, MLT will work with interested tribes and tribal members to protect sacred sites, cultural plants, and more. It's in the resolution that MLT will work with tribes throughout the planning process, and staff will ensure that this happens. The biological studies will provide information on rare plants and threatened and endangered wildlife so the trail can be designed to avoid harm to sensitive habitats. The GRT is a trail and restoration project, and ecological restoration will be incorporated into every GRT segment design. This grant will result in information and collaboration partnership to create a trail design that protects sensitive cultural and biological resources in collaboration with tribes and local community members. This trail design will be used to prepare CEQA compliance documents and apply for permits from various state and federal agencies, including DFW, the Water Board, possibly U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and possibly the Army Corps. As I explained in the previous presentation, next slide, please. Regarding the grant to Sonoma County for support of the Great Redwood Trail Agency, the Coastal Conservancy, GRTA, and GRT project partners are involved in an ongoing process of collaboration with tribal governments and tribal communities with ancestral lands near or on the GRTA right-of-way to build trust and better understand and address California Native American tribes and tribal community members' concerns about the Great Redwood Trail project. Tribal concerns about this planning project will similarly be handled through both programmatic measures in the master plan and programmatic EIR, as well as through project-specific planning with the tribes for this 13-mile segment. This slide shows the northern end of the planning area. You can see Outlet Creek alongside the former rail line, and the roadway is Highway 162. Outlet Creek is significant to California Native American tribes in the area. Tribes have expressed concerns to the Great Redwood Trail Agency about overall impacts from the trail on sensitive cultural resources and sacred sites, among other topics. This project includes collaboration and consultation with California Native American tribes as a significant component. The right side of the slide pictures Conservancy staff with some of our partners from the Great Redwood Trail Agency and the Mendocino Land Trust. We work closely with them to support the planning and construction of this trail. Thank you. And I believe Nicolette Houts from the Mendocino Land Trust and I are available to answer any questions you may have about this exciting project. Thanks again.
Tunnel has a lot of bats in it. So don't walk through it unless you like bats. Are there any comments?
We have no raised hands.
All right, do I hear a motion that we approve item 7?
So moved.
Mr. Halsey, do you want a second?
Yes. Yeah,
okay. All right, Paul, will you call the roll?
Mr. Cummings?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Mr. Halsey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 7 is approved.
Great. Terrific. Thank you. Thank you, Louisa. Joel, thanks. Okay, let's see. Where are we here? Item 8, Aaron Gravely will present that. It is the San Mateo Resource Conservation District, Pedro Point Headlands.
Trying to figure out the lights here.
Got it? Perfect.
Yeah. Thanks. All right. Good afternoon, Chairman Bosco and members of the board. My name is Erin Gravely, and I will be presenting the Pedro Point Headlands Wildfire Resilience Program project. Staff recommends the Conservancy authorize a $4,114,532 grant to the San Mateo Resource Conservation District to undertake the Pedro Point Headlands Wildfire Resilience Program, consisting of 1, planning and preparing permit applications and environmental review documents for wildfire fuel reduction, including removal of mature trees, and 2, planning and implementing discrete vegetation management tasks at the Pedro Point Headlands in San Mateo County. Pedro Point Headlands is a popular recreation spot adjacent to the city of Pacifica, with hiking and biking trails featuring stunning views of the coastline and tranquil paths through thriving native habitat. It is a preserved open space made up of property owned by both the Conservancy and the city of Pacifica. Due to its location immediately adjacent to the city, the property provides access to open space and recreational opportunities for residents in Pacifica, as well as regional urban visitors from the greater San Francisco Bay Area and beyond. The property is in places heavily vegetated with eucalyptus trees and other potential wildfire fuels, creating a high wildfire risk. It is also partially located in and surrounded by high and very high fire hazard severity zones, as identified by CAL FIRE. The property directly abuts Highway 1 and a residential neighborhood, as shown in this photo, with Pedro Point Headlands shown in the hillside behind the residential development in the city of Pacifica. This transition zone, where human development meets unoccupied land, is called the Wildland Urban Interface, or WUI. Due to the proximity of wildfire fuels to human development, it is especially important to address wildfire risk in these areas. Under portion 1 of the program, the RCD will plan for fuel reduction along the WUI area abutting private residences, shown here in orange, to reduce wildfire risk. This area is approximately 10 to 20 acres. Portion 1 tasks include engaging with landowners, the city, CAL FIRE, and other stakeholders, determining recommended treatment types for specific areas, which may include removal of mature trees, finalizing treatment prescriptions for each area, and preparing environmental review documents and permit applications. Once CEQA is complete, the Conservancy could consider funding for implementation. Portion 2 of the program will cover the entire Pedro Point Headlands property, shown in brown and blue on the map. Under Portion 2, the RCD will plan for and implement wildfire fuels reduction tasks which do not require environmental review documents. This allows the RCD to address some wildfire fuels reduction tasks with more expediency to reduce wildfire risk. These vegetation management tasks may include removal of non-native species, vegetation thinning to reduce ladder fuels, and reestablishment of fire-resilient native species, and does not include the removal of healthy, scenic, or mature trees. Under a separate project, the RCD has started planning and permitting for a wildfire fuel management project along the Highway 1 evacuation corridor that also falls in the WUI of Pedro Point Headlands. The Conservancy is helping fund this work through a pre-existing regional forest and fire capacity grant to the RCD. The Pedro Point Headlands Wildfire Resilience Program will provide the funding to address the remainder of the Pedro Point Headlands WUI and allow the RCD to more holistically plan and permit for wildfire risk reduction at Pedro Point Headlands. That concludes my presentation. Timothy Federal, the Senior Program Manager for Forest and Fire Health at the San Mateo RCD, is on the line, and we are available to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Erin. Are there any questions? Could we have the light back again?
I'm trying. Oh.
There we go. Any questions, comments?
We have no raised hands for public comment.
There's no comments? Okay. No.
Move approval.
Okay, Mr. Cash moved, and
Joy Sterling seconds.
Okay, Ms. Sterling seconded that we approve item 8. Paul, will you please call the roll?
Mr. Cummings?
Aye.
Mr. Cash?
Aye.
Ms. Perrault?
Aye.
Mr. Hallisey?
Aye.
Ms. Sterling?
Aye.
Chair Bosco?
Aye.
Item 8 is approved.
Okay, great. Thank you, Aaron. That concludes our project part of the agenda. Item 9 is Conservancy member comments. Do we have any Conservancy member comments? I guess I took up all that time. But all right, then how about public comments on non-agenda items?
We have one public comment.
All right. Please go ahead.
Thank you, board members. Walter Lamb again with the Bionic Wetlands Land Trust. And want to talk, not surprisingly, about the Bionic Wetlands, which is an extremely important ecosystem in the coastal zone. And we were informed last week that presently the Conservancy has no involvement with the Bionic Wetlands Restoration Project. And that was a surprise, just given the 20 years during which the Conservancy was not only the primary, if not exclusive, funder of that planning process, but also the lead staffing agency. I think that's kind of gotten lost a little bit, that the Conservancy was really the driving force behind the planning effort. It obviously didn't go the way the Conservancy envisioned back in 2004 when you first funded it. It's a very complex ecosystem, and it's complex not only in the ecology, but in the human element. It's very urbanized. There's a lot of people with different opinions, lots of different agencies with different interests. So very hard to coordinate. But it is what it is. I don't think the appropriate thing to do is to simply walk away, especially in terms of talking about tribal engagement today. I think the Conservancy was certainly leading or at least helping with that. And I'm not sure that there was any communication or closure to that when the Conservancy ended its involvement. So there's other funding than the Prop 12 funding. And more importantly, there's other ways to address some of the issues facing the Bionic Wetlands. We heard a lot today about fire danger. We heard about climate. We heard about sea level rise. We heard about equity. All those things are big issues at the Bionic Wetlands. So it's not okay to just sort of walk away and say, well, it didn't work out the way we hoped. We've got to figure out something. And I think that the Conservancy is an important piece of that. So I guess I would just ask for you to sort of rethink, just sort of walking away and maybe figure out what your involvement should be. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Lamb. Are there any other public comments?
We have no other public comment.
Okay, then we'll now move to the closed session part of our agenda. Ryan, do we need to have a closed session? Okay, so we'll have to, should we clear the room or should we go somewhere? I don't know.
We can stay here, the board members and staff involved in the closed session. And Mr. Cash and Ms. Sterling, I texted you the phone number, and Dr. Cummings, I emailed you the phone number. So if you could check your email and text, and we will go to closed session in about a minute or two.
Okay, the Conservancy is back in open session. During the closed session, the Conservancy heard advice from legal counsel on agenda item 11.C and gave direction to legal counsel on that item. Having said that, our next meeting is scheduled for April 17, 2025, and will be held in Santa Cruz at the City Council Chambers. We will need a quorum of board members in person for that meeting. And thank you, everyone. We are now adjourned.